We are looking at Ruth these couple weeks. I'm sorry to miss last week. And I also missed Ruth in my Bible here somewhere. Here we go. It's after Judges in case you need help like I did. Ruth is a wonderful book to read. You can read it this afternoon if you haven't been reading it already. So, Pastor Randy's sermon is Gleanings from Ruth, A Return to Hope. I will read chapter 2 and you can follow along. Now, Naomi had a kinsman on her husband's side, a prominent rich man of the family of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain behind someone in whose sight I may find favor." She said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she went. She came and gleaned in the field behind the reapers. As it happened, she came to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Just then Boaz came from Bethlehem. He said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." They answered, "The Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, "To whom does this young woman belong?" The servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, "She is the Moabite who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab." She said, "Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the reapers." So she came, and she has been on her feet from early this morning until now, without resting even for a moment. Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Now listen, my daughter, do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Keep your eyes on the field that is being reaped and follow behind them. I have ordered the young men not to bother you. If you get thirsty, go to the vessels and drink from what the young men have drawn." Then she fell prostrate with her face to the ground and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your sight that you should take notice of me when I am a foreigner?" But Boaz answered her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. May the Lord reward you for your deeds, and may you have a full reward from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge." Then she said, "May I continue to find favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, even though I am not one of your servants." At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come here and eat some of this bread and dip your morsel in the sour wine." So she sat beside the reapers, and he heaped up for her some parched grain. She ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. When she got up to glean, Boaz instructed his young men, "Let her glean even among the standing sheaves, and do not reproach her. You must also pull out some handfuls for her from the bundles and leave them for her to glean, and do not rebuke her." So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. She picked it up and came into the town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gleaned. Then she took and gave her what was left over after she herself had been satisfied. Her mother-in-law said to her, "Where did you glean today? And where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The name of the man with whom I work today is Boaz." Then Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "Blessed be he by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." Naomi also said to her, "The man is a relative of ours, one of our nearest kin." Then Ruth the Moabite said, "He even said to me, 'Stay close by my servants until they have finished all my harvest.'" Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is better, my daughter, that you go out with his young women, otherwise you might be bothered in another field." So she stayed close to the young women of Boaz, gleaning until the end of the barley and wheat harvests, and she lived with her mother-in-law. Pastor Randy, come and share with us, and may God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you, Janet, for reading the Word for us. This great story in our sermon series in Ruth. It's so good to see everyone here. Last week, as we explored chapter 1, we see the theme of friendship. What an awesome theme in the Bible. The theme of friendship. Ruth choosing friendship with her mother-in-law, Naomi. Choosing to stay with her, even in the midst of all of the unknowns. And in that friendship, choosing and finding the God of Israel. This theme of friends, how appropriate for church? Because church is a bunch of friends, and friends in the community that we want to invite in, worshiping God together. So it fits pretty good here, this theme of friendship in chapter 1. Last week I invited you to think about a Twitter hashtag for the sermon series. I'm wondering if anybody has a Twitter hashtag to throw out there from week 1. It's okay, I got some. Twitter hashtag, strong women in the Bible rock. Hashtag, Jesus is also our friend. Hashtag, speaking honest with God, go Naomi. Hashtag, God of the Old Testament, wild, crazy story. Hashtags are good because they pull these themes together for us. And so I'm curious what your themes are. Keep thinking about them. What's sticking out to you as we go through this sermon series? In our story to begin Ruth chapter 2, the readers are left at the edge of their seat. Imagine hearing this story, just like we're going to hear stories at retreat, being passed down orally, because a lot of them were not reading, so the stories were passed down verbally, around the campfire, and Grandpa is sharing this story. And you're at the edge of your seat, because chapter 1 has just ended, and you don't know what's going to happen here to start chapter 2. Because these two women are very vulnerable, and they're on the move. They're moving back to the home in Judah. And they're vulnerable because they don't have the social security of the family that was so important at that time in the ancient Near East context. And so you're at the edge of your seat because we also know that there's a lack of food and that they're coming with very little. There's famine. Now we are told that they're coming back to a time at the beginning of the barley harvest. So we know that there's probably a lot of food available. But we don't know is if, even if there's a lot of food available, will they be able to access it? Because we know that there's a great difference between availability of food and access to food. And certainly that is the truth today, even where we live in the United States. Let me just take 2 minutes to go away from Ruth here and talk about that here. Just because there's lots of food doesn't mean people have access to it. And often the most vulnerable don't have access. In the United States, there's 15 million households suffering from food insecurity. Right here. 11.8% of all U.S. households. That's according to the Department of Agriculture. 5.8 million United States states households suffer from severe food insecurity, which means the people who live in them are often hungry. And 2.9 million households with children are food insecure. So just because we have lots of food doesn't mean everybody has access to it. And so that's the case for our two women in our story today. And so you're at the edge of your seat as this story begins. Will Ruth and Naomi have access to food? From earliest times, the religious and legal tradition of ancient Israel insisted that the vulnerable have access to food. But that doesn't mean it always got it. But the tradition insisted that the widow, the orphan, and the alien are to be cared for. That's in Exodus 22, Deuteronomy 10. It's part of the Levitical code and law for Israel. Take care of the orphan, the widow, and the alien in many different ways. But as we know is the case today, that wasn't always followed very well. Israel knew that that was part of God's plan for them, that they loved their neighbor. But we know they didn't always do that. And so we're left at the edge of our seat here as we read at the beginning of chapter 2. Ruth says to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain behind someone in whose sight I may find favor." And Naomi blesses her and says, "Go, my daughter." And so she goes. What does it mean that Ruth is going to glean? So that's a big theme here. It's the title of the sermon series, Gleanings from Ruth. So I just want to take a little bit of time here to think about what the word glean means. To glean is to gather leftover grain or other produce after a harvest. It's the act of collecting the leftovers. My grandpa was a potato farmer in E-Town, Keener Potatoes, and I heard stories of people from the community coming in and gleaning behind after the digger went through. And they would gather up a little bit for themselves. And my grandpa wanted them to be able to do that because they weren't probably going to be able to go back and get all of them. So it's this practice of hospitality to allow the leftovers to be gleaned from often the most vulnerable. It's a practice described in the Hebrew Bible that actually came from a legally enforced entitlement for the poor. According to the book of Deuteronomy and Leviticus, farmers should leave corners of their field unharvested, should not pick up which was dropped, and should not harvest any looked over produce that had been forgotten. Gleaning is in art. I have a couple pictures here. Here's a picture of women gleaning in the field and men as well. I don't have the title of the author there. I will get that for you. There's another picture here as well. And again, I don't have the author. I thought it was on the picture, but I don't see it there. But here we see images in art of people gleaning. It was a popular subject, especially in Europe, in the midst of many famines that were going on. People gleaning, people depended on this age-old practice dating all the way back to ancient Near East of providing for their food through the hospitality of others. Just the other week, I was the recipient of some peaches gleaned from the Kaufman farm. I appreciated that greatly, but you practice gleaning there. Dumpster diving is a kind of a modern-day form of gleaning, if any of you have done that. I won't tell you all my stories. So we know Ruth is gleaning in the fields. Now, there's something here that can be so easy to pass over here if you don't look at it carefully. We are told that Ruth just is going to go out to try to find a place. But it's not as if Naomi said, go to Boaz's field. But rather, it says that it was a mere circumstance that she came to the field of Boaz. You can almost miss it, that it wasn't a request to go to Boaz's field to glean. Ruth goes out to glean barley to sustain herself and Naomi in chapter 2, verse 3, and it says, as it happened, She came to the part of the field belonging to Boaz. That's significant, I think. Because we can just think, well, that's a coincidence. That's great. But it's more than a coincidence here, friends. This is nothing short of God at work in a miraculous way that Ruth is led to the field of Boaz, who we are told is a pillar of the community, whose name is attached to one of the pillars of the temple, who just happens to be related to Naomi's dead husband. And in this story, we read that Boaz praises Ruth for her loyalty to her mother-in-law in chapter 2, verse 11. And then through his generosity, recognizes the blessings of God that he calls down upon her. May the Lord reward you for your deeds, and may you have a full reward from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge. We could spend a lot of time digging into all of that and the significance of that and how it points to Jesus. We could talk to Janet about that in her Hebrew class. There's so many rich stuff in those verses there. The way Boaz names the blessings of God and refuge. Is this all just a coincidence, as the author suggests? Or is this nothing short of a miracle through mere happenstance? God in the Old Testament speaks through burning bushes. God divides seas. God creates the entire world through the spoken word Dabar. But here, God doesn't speak in the huge, huge ways that are obvious to everyone, but rather through mere circumstances, through the faithfulness of ordinary human beings. God's chesed, loving kindness, is embodied in human action. Where do we see coincidences in life? Was that just a mere coincidence? That when I stepped out of the elevator, I felt like, I'm going to go left this time. And I don't really know why, but I just feel like I'm supposed to be there. And then something happens. God shows up in a cool way. Mere coincidence or God at work? This story invites us to ask those questions of how we end up where we're at during the day at just that time when we're in the grocery aisle and I meet that person at just this time, and that had to be God. If we see God at work in a living way in our lives. So after the hospitality of Boaz, an instruction to his young men, we're told, quote, let her glean even among the standing sheaves and do not reproach her. Verse 16, you must also pull out some handfuls for her from the bundles and leave them for her to glean and do not rebuke her. We're told that Ruth gleans in the field until evening, and then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was an ephah of barley. She picked it up and went back to her home. I asked Don if he could find me some barley. We unfortunately don't have any barley right now, but we have some cat's tail here. Thank you, Don. Can you imagine coming back to Naomi, your mother-in-law, who is literally at rock bottom, given up on God, starving, afraid for food, not knowing where her daughter-in-law Ruth would find hospitality, and she comes home to her mother-in-law, not just, this is a little bit, but imagine a lot coming home, an embodiment of hope right here in that basket as she came home. The tide is turning in this story in Ruth 2, and Naomi names it. Naomi cries out her thanksgiving. She recognizes this turn of events and that the hand of God is at work in it. Blessed be Boaz by the Lord. See, by the Lord. She's connecting the work of God to the work of Boaz. She's not separating them. Blessed be Boaz by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead. Emptiness in chapter 1 is turning to hope. And it's an old, vulnerable widow who has seen her share of sorrow and suffering that recognizes God in it. Perhaps that is significant for us, that those who have had long experiences of suffering can recognize in a special way where hope is beginning to come from God. This is a story of a return to hope, and there's a theme of return here. They're returning back to Judah, to Israel. But there's another kind of return. This return to hope from despair. For the first time, Naomi is able to believe that God has not completely forsaken her. Blessed be Boaz by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living. I want to go back to the theme of gleaning here as I end the sermon. I think it's so appropriate that the theme of gleaning is connected to hope. Why do I say that? Gleaning is the perfect image, I believe, for how God often works in the midst of the unknown. See, gleaning is not a practice where one goes in hopes of storing up enough for the entire year. Rather, gleaning brings enough for today, or maybe for today and a few days in advance. It's this constant daily trust in the hospitality of the community around that there will be enough for today. And that's often, it seems, how the return to hope goes as well. The return to hope does not happen through a huge combine harvest where you're storing up enough for all year. That's often, it seems, just not the case. The return to hope is slow work. Slow work that's often just feels like it's a day at a time, because I can't jump to a year ahead if the suffering is too hard. The return to hope from despair is this day at a time gleaning that is fully dependent on the community's hospitality. That's the theme of gleaning for us. I saw a story from the Conestoga Valley Christian Community Service online, and I wanted to share it. It's a very powerful story, and it connects with the theme of food as well, which we are collecting out here. It says, "We're touched by the words from a client in our Back on Track program." And this is the quote from this client. "Thank you so very much for the blessing of food. My son and I both left in tears. He even said, there are nice people in the world. He has been so worried about how we are going to get food and pay for a hotel room." So this person falls into the statistics of food insecurity. And they're right here in Conestoga Valley. "It has been a rough time for us, to say the least. People like you and your organization give us hope and has brought a little piece of God back into our lives. Since my mother passed away 3 years ago, it has been one thing after another. We have been struggling with our belief. We are slowly coming back." Slowly coming back. Just like the slow work of gleaning and the love and hospitality of the community. Not mere circumstance, I believe, but God at work in a very powerful way in the return to hope. Our theme song that Shelby will be leading us in here is called "Nothing is Lost on the Breath of God." We sang it last week. I love these words, and we're going to sing them today and the next 2 weeks as well. It names that God is at work even in the littlest of things. Nothing is lost on the breath of God. Nothing is lost forever. God's breath is love, and that love will remain, holding the world forever. For Naomi, it was really hard to believe that God's love was going to remain as we ended chapter 1. But as we've come into chapter 2 now, we've seen these words that no, God has not forgotten me, has not forgotten the living. It's a worship to God of Israel that God's love will remain. And we're going to see in the next two chapters, chapter 3 and 4, how God's love and faithfulness will continue to be embodied in this story in Ruth. May you receive that God's breath is love and that love will remain.